Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing today?
Well, I know we're doing a Q&A.
We sure as fuck are.
And we're a little late getting this out.
We are. But there was a Last Supper.
I feel like
we
say this every time.
There was a Last Supper involved.
Yeah, there was. There was. It's the Last Supper. Well, that we'll hear probably three more times, at least.
I have no idea what's coming up in
there. There's other Gospels.
I know,
cover the same shit.
I don't know what they cover and what they don't
either,
cover.
But
I mean, know what's left out. I don't know what's included.
Definitely hear it at least one more time.
I mean, one of them may mention that they go through a drive-thru right quick.
It could be. Maybe they got McDonald's, right? You never know. So which chapter is it we're covering today?
Little Maddie, chapter 26.
All right. You ready to do this?
I sure as fuck am.
All right. Let's do it.
Okie dokie. All right. Before we hop into this Q&A covering Little Maddie, chapter 26.
Yeah.
I wanted to clarify authorship of this book because,
okay.
We kind of got off a little bit of who authored this book and
Then
kind of got called out. And then you made a statement and it kind of rubbed me wrong. I was like, no, that did not happen. So here is what happened. And I've just re-listened to several episodes to confirm what happened.
Sure.
Okay. So in the intro to the book of Matthew, which is what we're currently reading.
Right.
I did say that the book was written after the Apostle Matthew's death.
Yes.
Okay? And that we don't know who wrote it. And that it was based on a book, Mark, that actually was written prior to Matthew. Even
sure.
though Matthew comes first in the New Testament.
Right.
Okay? I stated that it was likely a Jewish man, but preaching to followers of this new religion that we referred to for the sake of brevity as Christian Judaism or
sure.
Jewish Christianity.
Right.
But it was this particular Jewish sect.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't to gain new followers. It was to rally the crowd, so to speak, of people who are already following.
Got it.
This sect. So at some point, one of us postulated that it might even have been followers of Matthew
right.
who wrote this.
Yeah.
And then at some point after that, you confidently stated it wasn't written by Matthew. It was written by his students or followers. And you said it so confidently that I then was like, yeah, that's what happened.
Okay.
But then we got called out because that's not known that that's who wrote it.
Sure.
So
it's definitely not Matthew.
It might have been Matthew collecting notes, but he's not the one who stapled the final copy.
Right.
And it might have been somebody else in his name because this is called the Gospel according to Matthew.
Sure.
It might be somebody else gathering his notes.
I did some digging into this myself, and there's not even a consensus on whether there was actually a Matthew.
Right.
At all.
And I was going to go there next, too. Was there even a Matthew?
Right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Was Matthew at this thing? Maybe, maybe not. Was he real? We don't even fucking know.
Right.
So I just wanted to clarify, like, when we said, both of us, eventually, yeah, it was totally just some followers of Matthew. It was some of his students. It was some of his acolytes. It was some of his, that was misleading.
Sure.
It wasn't entirely like 100% flat out wrong. It just is misleading because we don't know who fucking
wrote it. It's not entirely right either.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's definitely not right, even if it's not 100% wrong.
Yeah.
Okay? So I just want to clarify that. And then you were like, well, I got it from you. You said it. And I'm like, that's not my recollection. It was both of us kind of feeding each other the wrong direction and agreeing with each other until finally we reached a place where somebody finally called us out.
Sure.
As well they should. And please continue to do so, Fern. And anybody else who notices when we get it wrong, because we don't know what the fuck we're talking about. We're neither scholars nor academics, as I say regularly. And because this isn't material that is personally meaningful to us in a spiritual way,
right,
that we have, you know, great respect for and grew up with, it doesn't stick. And right. So it little details.
But while that we're
are going to be important to somebody else are not going to be as important to us. And so it will be easy for us to go astray is what I'm trying to say.
Right, right. While we're correcting things that we got wrong, possibly.
Yes.
You at one point, I don't remember which episode it was in, but when we were, it was about the parable of the talents.
Mm-hmm.
You said that a lot of Christians read it as though it were about money.
Because that's what our translation had said.
Because that's what our translation had said. But
right.
That was off base as well.
Yes. And our entire Discord group full of either current Christians, questioning Christians, or deconstructing Christians
yes.
were very quick to tell me, like across the board, 100%, that I had that wrong.
Yeah.
Which I apologize and also give gratitude to.
Yes.
Again, neither scholars nor academics, and we don't know shit.
But we do like to correct ourselves when we do something wrong.
We do.
So.
And publicly so that everybody else can, you know, follow along with us.
Yeah.
And learn stuff. And then forget it later and get it wrong again.
Right.
Which will happen.
Yeah.
Maybe not with the talents. Because I think I learned my lesson on that one. But I will definitely forget who the fuck any author is of any given book.
Sure.
I do know that this shit was not written by Matthew. At best, if he existed and if he was there,
right.
At best, it was based on his notes, which were then based on Mark's notes.
At best.
At best. Right. All right, so let's get into Little Maddie, chapter 26.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So in this chapter, the surface plot, like what's just happening on the surface, right?
Yeah, right.
Surface. I used that word twice.
You did, now three right. times.
Yes. It's like super dramatic. We get the Last Supper. We get, like, we're getting there, guys.
Yeah, this
like,
is Jesus shit.
This is the Jesus shit that you know. If you know nothing else about Jesus, you know that there's some kind of fucking Last Supper he has with his dudes, his big Tucci gang.
Fucker dies.
He gets arrested. He gets betrayed by Judas.
Yeah.
And he gets died.
Yeah.
You know?
Those are the things we know.
Those are the things we know.
Right.
Like, that's all I knew walking into this. But underneath all of that,
yep.
that's the surface story, okay? That's the story that basically almost everybody knows, if they know nothing else.
Yeah.
Underneath all of that, we've got Jewish ritual, we've got Roman politics, we've got Greek vocabulary, we've got literary callbacks to the Old Testament, aka the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
We've got weird historical questions. And then we've got some truly outrageous, like truly, truly outrageous. If you know Jem, you know Jem. Outrageous theological tension happening here. Okay.
Yes. For those who don't know Jem, it's a reference to an 80s cartoon.
Who is truly outrageous.
Truly outrageous.
Truly, truly, yeah. Truly outrageous.
I'm just trying to help our other, you know, listeners.
And this is how it goes. Jem is truly outrageous. Truly, truly, truly outrageous.
Yeah.
Jem is her name.
That's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So we go into this chapter, and it's split up into four different parts. It's a really long chapter.
Okay.
Okay. The first part is where we set the stage for the arrest and crucifixion of Jesus. Okay.
Yeah.
Then we flip our page of notes.
Yeah.
Several pages.
As some people like.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we get our second section. And that's the Last Supper with Tucci Gang. Okay.
Sure.
And a lot of shit happens there that we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Okay. Flip several more pages of our notes because people like that sound, that ASMR note flipping page.
But don't get too into it. You know, don't start making dramatic page flippings.
I mean, it only happens every so often.
Right.
Then we get our third section is Jesus going off by himself and praying and getting arrested. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are two separate events that happen in that section.
I have to apologize. There were times in the Old Testament where we kind of like got sad at the way things went for humanity and different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now we're in the New Testament. We've been tarnished by the entire Old Testament, and now all the bullshit and all the fucking crap just seems funny.
It's really funny or really infuriating.
I've been numbed to all the crap.
Yeah.
They could be. Look, there's still going to be stories that we're going to be like, damn, that was rough. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's so much wrong with everything we're reading.
Yeah.
And so many things. Like, you can't even take this book seriously.
Okay, like, this is out of order, but we have already read chapter 27, which actually talks about Jesus dying. Like, that's his death.
Yeah.
Is in the next chapter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And I specifically stated in that chapter that I knew mentally that I was supposed, like, logically I grasp that I'm supposed to be feeling this great emotional, I'm supposed to be distraught over what's happening to my guy Jesus, right? But that it didn't feel earned. There was no solid emotional buildup. I have no spiritual connection to this guy going in, and the book did not do a good job.
No, they prophecy stuffed right up to the last minute.
Yeah, so like as I'm reading, like, yeah, he gets spit on, yeah, he gets kicked and slapped and stuff, and I'm like, that sucks. But then I'm like, yeah, but anyways, kids get bullied in school all the fucking time, dude. I'm sorry, whatever. Yeah.
This guy sacrificed a weekend.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Whatever.
Like, I couldn't bring it.
Right.
You know, and. And then I kept thinking about times that I was brought to tears in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
You know, and how I just wasn't feeling it.
It was usually at the behest of something God did to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like mm-hmm. It was just.
Or approved of.
Or other cultures did to a human. Like, whatever. There,
right.
There was a lot of terrible human shit.
Yeah.
In that book.
Yeah.
So.
It was not good.
Right.
I cried over a wife that got kicked out and chopped into a million pieces and,
right.
You know, raped and stuff. Like, I don't know if you recall that, but
yeah.
The guy was like, I would rather you take my wife than.
I thought it was his daughter.
Oh, maybe it was his daughter.
It was somebody.
It was somebody who he was like, I would rather that you take her than come in here and rape me and make me gay.
Right.
I mean, that's basically what it was. And
well,
I hate you.
Yeah, there's more to it than that. But I mean, yeah. Essentially.
It was horrible, though. It was a horrible, horrible, unexpected, needed trigger warnings.
Yeah.
Like, fuck the Bible all the way.
Yeah.
Anyways, fourth section of this chapter, after he has his Last Supper and goes off to pray and gets arrested and stuff,
mm-hmm.
We get the trial before the Sanhedrin.
Yeah.
Okay? That is where we're supposed to be like, oh, this is going to be sad. Sadness is happening. Poor
yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, poor Jesus.
Okay, and that's where the chapter ends. But there's like a lot that happens in this chapter.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Okay, so let's go back to the first section. Okay, Jesus for the millionth time is like, guess what? I just want to remind you guys, I'm totally going to get betrayed. I'm going to suffer and I'm going to get crucified. I don't know if I've told you this story. Stop me. Stop me if you've heard this. And all of his guys are like, no, I don't think that could ever happen.
Sure.
But yeah, you have told us that. I guess it sounds familiar maybe, but I'm still, I don't know about all that.
Think they'd be like, hey, could maybe we stop going towards the people that are going to do that? Like,
right?
If you know, like, let's just not.
What if you write down the arrow in the direction of where the trouble is, and then let's go the opposite direction.
Right, yeah.
You know, but then you get into, like, the Matrix and Neo, like, can you change your fate kind of thing?
Sure.
You can't. Sometimes trying to change your fate brings your fate.
I mean, we're assuming that fate is a thing.
We're,
to begin with.
We're so. In this fucking book where we're supposed to pretend that the Son of
right.
God is whatever.
Yeah, let's just call this fiction. Like, you know, it's just fucking fiction.
It's just, it could be such cool literary historical fiction.
Yeah.
It could be such cool mythology to study. So the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, the leaders, they're all getting together and they are plotting against this guy and they are consulting about his death. And Jesus knows because he's brilliant. Also he's God. But he's human, but he's God, but he's human.
Yeah.
Okay. He's both simultaneously.
Right.
Okay. So then a woman comes in and is like, whoa, you smell so fucking bad. I'm going to dump perfume on you. Okay. And so this is verses 10, 11, and 12.
I don't think it was about him smelling bad.
I mean, why? Random lady comes in and is like, woo! And then she dumps perfume on him.
No, it was about treating, like, she was aware. She believed him.
Here's the thing. Let me read this.
Okay.
We've got verses 10, 11, and 12. Aware of this, all the plotting.
Yeah.
Jesus said to them, his guys, why are you, or they're like, oh, bitch, get the fuck out of here. We could sell that expensive stuff
right. And
feed the poor, just like we learned in the last chapter, is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be prepared, and we're supposed to feed the hungry. Get the fuck out of here, you dumb bitch. And then Jesus is like, excuse you, chillax. Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you'll only have me for a second. You will not always have me.
Right.
When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. But here's the thing. She didn't know. She wasn't part of Tucci Gang.
No, but she, okay. So, but let's go back through all of the Jesus shit, right? And throughout the whole thing, mm-hmm. the blind and the lesser have referred
they've
to him.
They've always known.
They've always known.
Yeah.
Right? So this is just more of that. That's all mm-hmm. this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just have so much to say about this. Okay. So this is actually an allusion to Deuteronomy chapter 15, verse 11. There will always be poor people in the land. Therefore, I command you to be open-handed toward your fellow Israelites who are poor and needy in your land. So the guys had it right. They're like, we could be feeding the poor with this very expensive shit.
Yeah.
So what is, why, what?
Yeah.
And me and you were like so offended, like, you'll always have poor with you.
Well, it was bad timing because they just literally got done talking about
invest wisely.
Right.
And
yeah.
be brave. And yeah.
Yeah. So it was just, it was very bad timing with regard to
this lesson this versus happened. Those lessons. Yeah. Yeah. But what we're supposed to have understood magically is that Jesus' statement was not intended as poverty is inevitable, so don't even bother helping poor people.
Okay.
Okay. We're supposed to understand that because, you know, sometimes he means help them now, and sometimes he means they'll be there. You can help them later.
Sure.
We're to know which time is which.
Yeah.
Now, his time here on the planet is short, and he has been telling them that. So right now, his priority has upped. He's like, no, fuck the poor right now. Do me.
It's all about me.
Yeah, me. I'm only going to be here a few more minutes.
Sure.
So you can deal with the poor tomorrow. They ain't going anywhere. Okay? It's more like, though, you will continue to have opportunities to help the poor. That's the nice way of saying you can deal with them fuckers tomorrow.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Starving today, starving tomorrow, nothing will change.
Yeah.
Okay? This particular opportunity to honor me, the awesome me, is fleeting.
I feel like that's so just, we were so vain.
We were, you know, so appalled. Like, you dare? Like, wow. Who dost thou think thou is't?
Right.
Bitch.
Well, even if you're God, right? Like, you're supposed to be, like, you kind of pitched yourself as meek and meager. Like, you want the humble. Lesser, humble, right?
Yeah.
Like that's the whole message you've been trying to pitch.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden you're like, fuck it, I'm only here a couple more days, so.
Yeah, I am Superman.
Give me all the rich perfume,
right?
You know?
They're about to kryptonite me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I'll take some fucking perfume.
Right.
Here's some things we need to note, okay? The perfume wasn't actually perfume.
Yeah.
Okay? It the original word is more closely related to fragrant ointment or oil. And that's why he's like, nah, I'm being anointed for my deathbed. She's right. not just like dumping perfume on me. She's actually anointing me.
Yeah.
And it's important to note that difference.
Sure.
I guess. We're supposed to think it's important as
right.
readers.
Right.
Okay. The woman doesn't actually know that Jesus is going to die in 2 days. She's and that she's anointing him for burial. She just knows that he's fucking special. And she's like, my Lord, here is some good stink.
Which that makes it even more bothersome, though.
Right.
Because if she doesn't know,
right.
then it is wrong. Because the intention behind it is wrong.
Right. Because she's honoring instead of helping.
Right.
Yeah. And my take is, yeah, Jesus, she's so fucking important. You couldn't even fucking name her. At least you named the other lady that you called a dog before you, you know, changed her mind. Because even dogs got to eat crumbs.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. But he doesn't name her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she didn't know. Okay.
Yeah.
Matthew tells us the perfume is, or the book of Matthew
yeah.
tells us that the perfume is connected to Jesus's burial, but the story itself doesn't really give us a reason to think that she understood the full situation.
Right.
Economically speaking, the disciples' objection is not stupid at all. They were actually in the right.
Yeah.
And Jesus just didn't explain it good enough to them or us, really.
I am going to personally leave room for the fact that because of the way he's treated the lesser and the blind and the people that were like that in the past, they've had some sort of like knowing about Jesus that was just an understanding between the lesser and Jesus.
You know the way the poor are always closer to magic
sure.
and childlike innocence in their poorness? You know, as they're starving to death, they are very childlike and stupid, but they always have, you know, well, their mental capacities are challenged. Otherwise, they wouldn't be poor. So they have the ability to see past everything and be magical and to know of his magicness. Right?
Sure. I was mostly just going with in context of the book of Matthew, the well, way that they've been treated in the past. This could track with the message that they want to convey.
They didn't present it well, but yes, you are right. Matthew wants the reader to understand that Jesus is extraordinary enough to warrant extraordinary devotion, and that to the ordinary rules of economic prudence, those normal rules don't necessarily apply. The ordinary rules don't necessarily apply to this extraordinary moment.
There was... God created hundreds of rules that Israelites were expected to follow to the T mm-hmm. all the time,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And here we are, and this is one of my biggest complaints about the New Testament.
Giant pet peeve.
We just keep changing the fucking rules, like, left and right all the goddamn time.
And you're still supposed to keep a lot of them.
Right. Only there's no real clear direction.
Right.
It's so fucking annoying.
Yeah. My next line in my notes is... This story only works if you're already inside Matthew's theological framework.
Yeah.
It only works. The story only works if you already know the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
You can only believe if you already believe. It's circular fucking logic. I mean,
that's essentially what Christians tell me all the time. You have to believe before you can believe. And it's like, wait, what?
Did you just hear
what the fuck did you just say?
Right? Yeah. And that's what the entire book of Matthew is. It's not written to convince people like me and you. It's written to rally the crowds of people who already believe.
What Christianity sounds like to me oftentimes is just a major fucking guilt trip. Like,
well, yeah.
Oh, you don't believe? Well, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
And you get fucking bullied into believing in Christ, essentially.
Yeah. Duh.
Like, that's how I view it.
You piece of shit. You fucking
right.
worm.
Yeah.
I mean... It goes all the way back to Yahweh. It's always been about that.
Right.
It's always been about you suck, and so you should really just believe in God.
Yeah.
Whatever flavor of the month God we're doing right now.
Yeah. I've never seen
the grass grow.
You would think that if like spiritual awakenings happened, that you would just like each of us probably would have witnessed sometime in our life somebody walking on the street and going, oh God, and like, you know, just like mm-hmm. a spiritual fucking coming to Christ moment or something, right? Mm-hmm. I've never once witnessed that or known anybody who has witnessed that outside of a church.
I will say that my dad had that happen to him.
Supposedly. We're taking his word for it.
Yeah.
We don't know. We like, there is no witness to that moment that right. we can account for it. It is something that people hold as these personal beliefs that, okay, if I'm to take your word for it, sure. I can't say you're wrong because it's your experience. But at the same time, I can't prove you're right either.
Right.
There is no way to see this. And honestly, even if we were to see it, oftentimes it would probably feel performative.
For me, it would be performative because I don't know how to. I would immediately be like, "What is happening right now? Right. I don't understand." Yeah. And please explain the look on your face because I can't follow. Like, how many times have I looked right at you and been like, "What is your face doing?"
Mm, yeah.
Or like, I don't understand that face that you're making right now.
I think honestly, the reaction that I might have would be like, "Babe, call 911. I think this person's having a mental break."
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, then we move on. Judas engages with the chief priest.
Yeah.
Right? He's like, hey, guess what? I will totally betray my guy,
yeah.
Jesus.
Right.
Okay? And he makes a sinister agreement for the price of 30 pieces of silver.
Right.
Okay?
Famously,
yeah. But he's not just like some random guy who decided on some random Tuesday, you know what? Fuck Jesus. Okay? Like, he didn't just wake up and be like, I think I'm going to do that today. That sounds like a fun plan.
Right.
Put on my shoes, you know, walk out, make some coffee. And today sounds like a good day to say, fuck Jesus.
Right.
Right? Yeah. It wasn't like that.
Okay.
His betrayal is supposed to fit into this larger story that Matthew believes was foretold by Scripture.
Sure.
Right? And so they stuff a lot into it to make that be true.
Yeah.
And that makes for a very large theological problem because, as you and I pointed out, if Judas's betrayal was part of God's plan, then why is Judas being condemned and what's he being condemned for?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't work. The math ain't mathin'.
Yeah. Either it was preordained or it wasn't.
I can't believe you did the thing that I literally am making you do.
Right.
I cannot believe you chose with your free will to do your destiny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. How are you even doing the thing that was in prophecy? That doesn't even make sense to me. Like, what?
It couldn't not have happened.
Right.
So it had to have happened.
Right. So,
and therefore, it was set in motion to happen by God's, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how is anybody wrong here?
No, they're not.
Right.
Is the answer.
Exactly.
It's trash.
Right.
It's rubbish. Yeah. It's nonsense. So we're not the only ones, obviously, that have asked this.
Sure.
Skeptics. Christian theology has also spent a lot of time wrestling with just this problem, the free will versus destiny question.
Right, I bet.
The free will versus God.
Because it's a glaring problem.
Yeah, it's huge.
This is a fucking problem.
Do we have free will? And if we do, then God gave it to us, and why are we being punished? But if we don't have free will, then anything that we do was already foretold. So again, why are we being punished?
Right.
So yeah, it doesn't work. So in addition to that issue, if Judas knew that Jesus was literally God, why is he betraying him? And we had a question about that. We were like, he clearly could not have been very convinced of Jesus's magicness.
Yeah.
Right. Like, otherwise, he wouldn't
If you thought this dude was God, you're not going to fucking betray him.
Right.
Right? That's just not going to happen.
So the thing about this, though, is something that we pointed out all the way through. Matthew, the book of, actually doesn't portray the disciples as having anything approaching the certainty that Christianity eventually adopts itself about Jesus.
It's true.
So, like,
they're often caught unawares that he has these powers, and
they're like,
whoa,
you're magic?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I didn't know you were the Son of God. You are? Tell me again about how you're the Son of God. I didn't know that. Like, it's always new news.
Right.
And when he walks on water or feeds people, the very next day he does it again, and they're like, whoa, dude, that's crazy. Like, they're just not very convinced that Jesus is special. So if Judas expected the Messiah to triumph rather than get arrested and executed, betraying Jesus could make more sense if Judas believed Jesus's power would protect him.
Right.
Like, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he was like, he's a magic man, mama.
Well, we kind of talked about, maybe they talked about this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we don't know.
Right. You know? Judas and Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's also the possibility that Judas just became disillusioned with what was happening and that Jesus was not.
I feel like that seems more legitimate.
Like, you know? Not living up to his promise.
Right.
Like, this is not what I signed up for.
Right. I mean, he was quite rebellious against the normal Jewish, you know, folk at the time. Mm-hmm. So, like, it was these people were going out on a limb to defend this guy, and he's about to get arrested and killed.
You right.
know, like, I don't know. This is the point where you're like, shit or get off the pot, I guess. Like,
and
are
Jesus,
you on board
what?
Or not? Right.
Yeah. 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 Matthew doesn't actually give us any indication as to why Judas made the decision he made. He just
right.
says he did that thing.
Yeah.
And then he later regretted it, but whatevs.
In a big way, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. The famous psychological motivations that we see attached to Judas nowadays, these come from later interpretations.
Got it.
We don't really get a good understanding of
motives.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a problem to me.
Yeah.
I want to understand what would motivate somebody to betray the Son of God.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a big point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
One of your own followers, major followers, is
one of his fucking apostles, not just disciples, apostles, doesn't believe him and betrays him.
Right.
But I'm supposed to?
Right.
Dude was face to face with him and saw all of the feeding and the walking on waters. And he didn't actually believe him, but I'm supposed to.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, moving on to the second section.
Right.
The
right.
actual Last Supper.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had a question. Was Matthew actually at, by we, I mean me. Was Matthew actually at the Last Supper?
Right.
And you were like, he totally was. And then you were like pushing me on it and pushing me on it. And I was like, I don't think he was, bro.
Okay.
And here's the thing. We don't know. It could have
sure.
gone either way. He might not even exist.
And okay. I can allow for that because that is definitely a consensus that's out there. But I guess what I was going with in that moment when I said that was the general consensus with regard to how it's been interpreted through time because the dinner shows the 12 apostles and,
right.
you know, whatever. So
the art that came several centuries later.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, absolutely. But I mean, that's the general
traditionally Christians have identified the author of Matthew as Matthew, the tax collector, apostle, et cetera, introduced earlier in the gospel.
Sure.
So hypothetically, yeah, he was there. But modern scholarship generally doesn't consider that identification of Matthew as 100% established.
Sure.
So the book of Matthew might not be the same Matthew as Matthew the tax collector that we met early on.
And that's fair. I don't think that anything is solid with regard to what we're reading when it comes to facts.
Right.
I was just going with my adamance about what was happening.
Is he supposed to have been there?
Right.
Yes.
Was based on tradition, not
sure.
on
sure.
facts. So,
just as a reminder, the gospel itself is anonymous, even though it's referred to as the gospel according to Matthew.
Sure.
The name Matthew comes from later Christian tradition.
Okay.
So even the name itself
was attributed later.
Yeah, it was attributed later. Even if the author were Matthew, that wouldn't necessarily mean he personally witnessed every story that is narrated here.
Well, he couldn't have because there's specifically things where Jesus takes two other people or three other people
or no other
somewhere else that he couldn't have witnessed. So.
Right, exactly. ancient authors could use oral traditions, earlier written sources, community traditions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to make up their own shit.
Sure.
And prophecy stuff and fill in blanks.
Yeah.
And that clearly happened a lot in this fucking story.
Yeah.
So Jesus makes preparations for the Passover. He remembers redemption. He eats with his disciples. He assures them again of his approaching death and mentions, hey, by the by, one of you is going to betray me.
Yeah.
Straight to their faces, he says
right,
it.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk about this Last Supper thing. There's a lot going on here.
Okay.
A lot that we need to understand. So at the Last Supper, Jesus takes the bread and says, this is my body. Then he takes the wine and says, this is my blood of the covenant.
Yeah.
That's super important because Matthew is invoking the covenant ritual of Exodus chapter 24, in which God establishes a covenant with Israel through Moses, and blood is used in that ritual. Don't forget, the Gospels and the Book of Acts are supposed to be a quote-unquote reenactment, a copy of the Pentateuch,
right?
The first five books of the Hebrew Bible.
Sure.
So in that tradition, God promises things, Israel has obligations, the covenant is symbolized and ratified through ritual involving sacrifice and blood.
Right. Only the old sacrifice, the old blood ritual was splattering blood and shit like that.
Mm-hmm. It was animals.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's some interesting verbology, some words and linguistics and word history. You know, yeah. I'm a nerd for that shit.
Yeah.
The words testament and covenant are connected through the Latin tradition. Okay. You know how the Bible was written in Latin?
Yes.
Or at one point.
Right.
But it's also connected, the words testament and covenant are also connected through the Greek word diatheke. So depending on context, diatheke can refer to an arrangement, a covenant, a testament, or a will. In the Jewish scriptures, the important meaning here is covenant. So a biblical covenant isn't simply a contract. It's a formal relationship established between parties with obligations, promises, rituals, and consequences. Okay? So when Jesus says, this is my blood of the covenant, Matthew's audience is supposed to think, oh, covenant, Moses, remember Sinai? Ooh, blood. Okay. I'm with you. And so the New Testament isn't just like a sequel to the Old Testament. It's literally a new covenant replacing the previous Mosaic covenant.
Sure.
So what we call the Old Testament and the New Testament, that's actually like not the right word. It's Old Covenant and New Covenant.
Right.
But the English leaned on the word covenant from the Latin rather than the Greek diatheke.
Yeah.
So God promises in Jeremiah chapter 31 that there's going to be a new covenant with Israel.
Okay.
And Jeremiah describes this new covenant as something different from the covenant made with Israel's ancestors. So Jesus's Last Supper is functioning as this declaration. The new covenant promised in the Hebrew Bible is being established through me right here, right now, today.
Sure.
That's why
I don't think Jeremiah was referring, like...
Oh, no, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
I don't think so either, to be clear. I'm not talking about what Jeremiah did or didn't intend.
Right.
I'm talking about what the book of Matthew is intending by invoking that.
Right, right.
And that matters because then we've got not... like your question was, yeah, but he's doing this before he's even died. Like his sacrifice hasn't even been made yet.
Yeah.
But that's why he's talking about it before he dies. And he's telling them
to establish it.
To establish it. It's right. To pre-enactment. It's a pre-enactment of his death and what he's about to do and letting them know, hey, remember last chapter I was telling you to be prepared? I'm still telling you, be prepared.
It's still really fucking weird.
It's very fucking weird. All of the sacrifices, whether we're talking about the Old or the New Testaments or Covenants or the Hebrew Bible or the Christian Bible, all of the fucking blood, whether it's animals, children, people, Jesus, all of it is gross and weird.
Yeah.
And unnecessary in the year 2026 with science and the ability to not only land on the moon, but to head towards Mars.
Right.
We do not need this silliness, this childishness, this caveman days.
Yeah.
We don't need this.
Right.
It's silly. But what he's saying is, this is what is about to happen to me. And this meal is the ritual which you will later remember and participate in its meaning. So that's why he's doing it before he dies.
Okay.
Okay. That's what we're supposed to get out of it. So different denominations have different interpretations of what happens during the what we now call the Eucharist or the communion.
Right.
I think the Catholics call it the Eucharist, and all of the other Protestant Christianity things call it communion. Although not all Protestants take communion.
Right, right.
So most of the churches that I've been to, they don't. Only a few have.
Yeah.
So there's two different things that could happen. One is that we're supposed to believe as we're taking communion or Eucharist or what the fuck ever, that the bread and the wine literally becomes Jesus' body and blood.
Right.
Yeah. Catholic doctrine holds that the Eucharist truly 100% in this moment becomes Christ's body and blood.
Sure.
Despite retaining the physical properties. I mean, this sounds like D&D. You know, we're playing fucking Dungeons and Dragons here.
Right.
It retains the physical properties of bread and wine, but is actually something else.
Right.
And this magical spell is called transubstantiation.
Mm, okay.
Which is a magical spell.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it is.
Right. It sounds something, like you said, straight out of D&D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it is.
Right.
You know, or that's where D&D gets it.
Right.
But what I'm saying is they're fucking interchangeable.
Yeah.
Because magic.
Right.
And it's silly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing is, obviously, it doesn't transubstantiate because magic isn't real and I can look at it and it's a piece of fucking bread or it's a, you know, fucking wafer cracker.
Yeah.
It just spiritually represents and symbolically commemorates Jesus. And so you're taking that moment to feel and relate to. Much the way I believe it's Muslims will take that moment to praise Allah, like they will pray in certain directions, right? At certain times of the day, they have to pray in different directions. They are literally stopping everything and in that moment relating to their God and practicing intentionally. And that's what communion is supposed to be. Stopping what you're doing, taking that moment and practicing your spirituality, your relationship with God intentionally.
Sure.
Whether you believe in magic and fake bread being people.
Yeah.
It's people. Soylent right. Green is people.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ is people. I still don't get it.
It's such a weird, like you said, in this time, this day and age, like to still believe that magic is happening in this moment is just, it's really weird to me.
To come at it from the outside, never having seen magic.
Right.
And never having come close to experiencing magic.
Right.
It definitely feels weird.
Yeah.
And silly.
Yeah.
And like, I can't take it seriously, you guys. I'm really sorry. Like, I know that probably sounds so mean and disrespectful to our Christian listeners. I want you to know I'm not trying to be mean when I laugh. I literally have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
Let me just take yourself out of your religion for a minute and look at the fact that you are literally performing a ceremony where you're eating flesh and blood, according to your religion.
Right.
Like, you're literally performing cannibalism as part of a ritual for your God, which is really, really weird.
Now, listen, if you take the magic spell part out of it, the intentionally taking a moment to have a connection spiritually with your
sure
your faith person.
I'm good like, with like meditation and shit like that.
That's pretty,
right?
Like I don't understand it, but I don't have a problem with that. That doesn't harm me. That doesn't feel silly or weird. Like, okay, I get that. That you know, you're taking a moment, you know, right. And you're connecting with, I don't know, like I have mentioned before that I lean a little bit more spiritual than you. Like when I'm in a forest surrounded by trees and nature and fucking birds and whatever, like if I can take my mind off getting bit up by bugs for a minute, I do feel very connected to something larger than myself. And what is spirituality if not that?
Right.
Right. Or if I am in a crowd, like at a protest or a rally, and we're all very excited about what we're fighting for.
Sure.
I feel very not connected to like something larger, like in a nature sense, but something larger in a human sense. And that feels very powerful to me. These are very emotional moments. And I can understand taking a moment, like putting your finger up and saying, everybody pause for a second. And just appreciate this.
Sure,
just,
but I don't...
Just appreciate this second here.
While I still... I experience the same things, but I would consider them, like, when you're in a forest and seeing all those things, to me, that is awe. It's just...
No, this, I totally
you're
agree.
You're awestruck, right? Like,
sure.
Which is just a normal emotion in my mind.
Right. No, I totally
and
agree.
The same thing with the crowd at the protest. Like, you, this is just... You all have this common goal that you're working mm-hmm. towards, and you're feeling that... You know, commonality with these peers of yours that are at this event. You know?
It's something outside of yourself that leaves you for a moment feeling breathless.
Right.
And somebody else might call that spirituality or oneness or connection with a creator, what the fuck ever.
Right.
That's a little too woo-woo for me. I just feel like I appreciate the beauty in that moment.
Sure.
That's all.
Yeah.
But... what I'm trying to say is taking a moment to intentionally connect. I don't have beef with that. It's when you start putting magic with it that I'm like, what the fuck are you? We don't need blood and body of people in order to take a second, like touch grass, babes, you know, come on. All right. So Jesus gives Judas one last opportunity at this dinner. Like they're chowing down on pizza. And Judas is the only one with pineapple on his pizza.
Yeah.
Which apparently is like, that's the most horrible thing that you can do.
I love pineapple.
Love pineapple pizza. We are the weirdos here, just so you know. Yeah. I don't know if you know, but everybody hates Nickelback and everybody hates Anne Hathaway and everybody hates pineapple on pizza. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are the three things you're supposed to hate.
Got it.
Okay. I love all three of those things. You love two. Of those three things. And at any rate, so Jesus turns to the guy that's fucking pineapple on your pizza. What is wrong with you, Judas? And he's like, you know, looking each of his guys and each of his guys like, no, I got pepperoni. I totally will not betray you. And then he turns to Judas and Judas is like, oh, is it me? Me? Just because I have pineapples on my pizza? And Jesus is like, yeah, bro, it's you. I mean, look at your fucking pizza.
Right.
So fucking obvious.
Yeah.
Right? So then Jesus eats Passover, which we just talked about. And he institutes the Lord's Supper, which we just talked about. And, you know, goes on and on about his fucking sacrificial death. And it's all magical and whatever. Then he sings a hymn with his disciple and he goes out to the Mount of Olives.
Mm.
You know, because they got to digest. They got to go for a little walkie-walk.
Yeah, right.
A walkabout. For the million and third time, he predicts his approaching death. And he announces, Judas might, like, totally betray me, but y'all will fucking desert me.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
Right.
And Peter's like, I mean, they might, but I won't. And to be fair, Peter follows.
I don't recall. He didn't tell everybody else that Judas was going to betray him, did he?
No, he's saying all y'all. No, you're right. You're right. He didn't necessarily be like, Judas is going to betray me. But he did like be like, no, it is you in front of everybody.
Okay.
And Judas was like, no, my pizza's fine. Fuck off. But then when they went for their little walkie walk, he's like, but all y'all are going to fucking desert me. And Peter's like, no, dude. I'm your man. Your guy.
Yeah.
I've been with you all the fucking way. But he's like, you will, though. According to verse 31, then Jesus told them, guys, this very night you will all fall away on account of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. Mm. You know, scatter, shatter, smother, covered.
Sure.
Yeah. That's actually a callback, you know, the word is written.
Yeah.
And I always look those up to Zechariah chapter 13, verses 6 and 7.
Okay.
If someone asks, what are these wounds on your body? They will answer, the wounds I was given at the house of my friends. Awake, sword, against my shepherd, against the man who is close to me, declares the Lord Almighty. Strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered and I will turn my hand against the little ones. Yeah, it had nothing to do with this.
Right.
I can't even with this bullshit. We do this every chapter. That's not what they were talking about, but that's where it was written.
Okay.
Fucking Zechariah.
Yeah. I feel like these people were like looking for anything to create a new version of their religion. They're like, how can we redo this?
Yeah.
Okay, take this, and that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's stuff this all together and we're going to create a new... we're going to go a different direction.
Kudos to them for having such a close reading that they knew which bits to take.
Sure.
But also, fuck them for having such a close reading. Okay, so Jesus goes off and prays by himself and he is in deep distress. He's like, oh my God, this is going to suck so bad. Please don't make me do this.
Which was really weird too, actually.
Yeah.
Like, you're the Son of God.
Yeah.
And you're going to heaven to rule.
Right.
Like, you're coming back to life also. Like, what exactly is it that you're...
It's going to hurt a lot.
I guess.
And he's like, this is going to suck, and I really don't want to do this. I will if you make me, but I just want to put it for the record that you, who is not me, who is separate from me, because we're not the same. Even though we are the same, we're not the same. We're not the same, but we are.
But, like, literally, it's a God questioning...
God himself,
right?
Yeah.
And questioning whether the decision is correct or if there's any way to change it. And it's like, a God can't even get this right?
No.
Okay.
No.
I just wanted to clarify because this is, to me, not a great sign for the correctness of the religion.
Okay, here's the thing. Here's what we're supposed to take from this.
Yeah, okay.
When he is out there praying, please take this cup from my lips.
Yeah.
That is the temptation, and he does it three times. Three times he is tempted in the desert.
Satan and all that other shit.
Yes. Okay. Yes. But he doesn't call his dad. He, at the end of every prayer, he's like, please don't make me do this. Please don't make me do this. Please don't make me do this. And then at the end of every prayer, he's like, unless you want me to, then I will. And so that's him, like, prevailing. That's maybe, him winning.
Maybe he thought right up until he died that he was gonna like pull a Abraham.
Right. You know, where, just kidding. Right. You don't have to cut off your. You don't have to kill your son. Psych. Right. And maybe, you know, similarly, that's maybe what Judas thought as well.
Sure.
Like right up to the very last minute.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Also, he's like really bummed because he takes Peter and his two bros aside, and he's like, okay, I need y'all to stay awake and pray with me, even though I'm going to come over here and pray by myself, but pray with me, but over here.
Right.
And stay awake and pray with me.
Yeah.
And then they keep falling asleep because, like, you know, they just ate Jesus. Right? Like,
yeah. Jesus, it was probably more the drinking of Jesus that caused the problem with sleeping.
Jesus tastes so good. Oh my gosh. He's yummy. Slurp. You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they kept falling asleep. And he's like, the last chapter, I kept telling you guys to be prepared. And you're not.
Right.
And this sucks. And we're supposed to keep that in mind, too.
Yeah.
Okay, as readers.
Well, his disciples / apostles have sucked all through the...
They totally fucking reading, suck. So. And that's why I'm fine. I'm like, oh, I'll be fine. Honestly. They had Jesus straight in their face telling them some shit.
Right.
And they didn't believe. So it's fine. I'm fine.
Right.
This will be fine. Also, then Judas comes along with the priest crowd and betrays Jesus with a kiss.
Okay.
And it wasn't like the word that's used is not just like, you know, like a kiss. It's like a very familiar, brotherly, like, it's a good smooch. It's not just like a peck. It's like a greeting warmly.
Yeah.
Like, he, and Jesus is like, yep, come do your thing. Like, right. I know.
Sure.
And then Judas does it.
Right.
And it, he doesn't just, like, check the box. He's like, brother!
He had to sell it.
You know? Yeah. And Jesus is like, I guess, okay, whatever.
Right.
So, okay, this is so cool. Okay, so then in verses 51, 52, and 53, with that, one of Jesus's companions reached for his sword. Now, I had to stop because in my notes and in different places, it kept talking about Peter as the one that cut off somebody's ear.
Hmm.
But in what we read, it just says one of Jesus's companions reached for the sword, drew it out, and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear.
Yeah, which seems problematic.
Well, one of the other stories, Gospels, it does name Peter as the guy who lopped off an ear.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
But in ours here, Matthew, it's just some random disciple. We don't know which one.
Right.
Okay? But spoilers, it's Peter.
Okay?
Anyway, so dude gets his ear cut off, right? And Jesus is like, oh my God, put your sword back in its place, for all who draw the sword will die by the sword.
But apparently, but the part I'm trying to wrap my head around is that apparently cutting someone's ear off is not a big deal.
Well, see, I'm going to get there in just a second. He's like, do you think I cannot call on my father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels?
Right.
And me and you were like, we do not think, indeed, that you can call on your father.
If you could, that would be a good play right now.
Right?
You know, like, I think you might win. I think you might win a lot of people to your side.
You would have convinced all of your followers. Right. You would have convinced everybody.
Yeah.
And the 2,000 years later, your story would still be told. And there wouldn't be people like wife and husband sitting here laughing at you.
Right.
Going,
right.
You're so full of shit, guy. Yeah. But, okay. So, yes, that was one of our questions, though, was a bit late for that, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we'll get there, though. Okay. So you and I had asked, what the fuck is a legion? And one of our Discord friends told us that a legion is about 5,000 soldiers.
Right.
Okay. So let's not forget the importance of where they are. They are in Rome.
Yeah.
Okay. And so a Roman legion, that's why he used that terminology.
Sure.
Because a Roman legion was a large military formation, traditionally around 5,000 to 6,000 soldiers. Although actual sizes varied over time. That's what we're supposed to.
Approximately, it's around there.
So Jesus is not just going to have the ability to call one of these. He's going to have the ability to call 12 of these, the magic number 12.
Sure.
We love 12. What is 12?
Tribes.
Yes, yeah. You got it. Ding, right. Ding, ding. Always with the tribes, yeah. Right? So 12 legions of angels mean something like tens of thousands of supernatural warriors, deliberately extravagant, so over the fucking top.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to prom, but if I was going, I could totally get somebody like Olivia Rodrigo or Chapel Rowe to go with.
It feels
me.
A little bit like this is the guy that always tells those like ridiculous stories, like, and you're like, okay, dude, whatever.
Right? Yeah, yeah. He's like, I could totally buy a car, but I'm driving an Uber because it's just better economically. But if I wanted, I could totally have 10 and then fill in the blank with fancy cars. I don't know cars.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
Right.
Oh, no, I expected you to.
Oh, Lamborghini,
okay,
Bugatti.
There you go.
Yeah, whatever.
You're not a car guy too much either. So.
I mean, I didn't know you were expecting me to fill in the blank. That's all. So.
Well, I mean, I don't know cars.
For sure.
So, yeah, Bugatti.
Yeah.
Spumante. No, that's champagne in it.
I don't. Maybe. I don't know.
So, anyway, he's like so over the fucking top is ridiculous and unbelievable. But what Jesus is supposed to be saying here that we're supposed to get out of it is don't mistake my non-resistance for helplessness.
Okay.
I'm intentionally being here.
Sure.
And it's like, what was that movie where Will Smith was like a superhero? Hancock.
Yeah.
Oh my, Hitchcock? Hancock.
Hancock.
That was such a good fucking movie.
Yeah.
And And there's a point at which his PR person tells him, you know, you got to clean up your image and, you know, make us all know you as the hero that you can be.
Right, because he's a drunk hero.
He's drunken on drugs, lonely, doesn't know who the fuck he is.
Right.
And he's like, what the fuck ever.
Yeah.
If everybody would just leave me alone.
Yeah.
And so he's always causing like chaos everywhere he goes. And at one point, he allows himself to be arrested and jailed.
Yeah.
And he makes friends in jail. But one time he like bounces the basketball too hard and it like flies way over the jail walls. And so he like flies out to go get it. And everybody's like, oh, see, he's escaping, but he gets the basketball and comes back.
Right.
And that's what this line reminded me of. Like, I'm here of my own free will. I could escape anytime.
Sure.
And I'm sure that that's what Hancock was drawing on.
Right.
Like, the Jesus image of intentionally allowing yourself to be bound by human rules that don't actually apply to you.
Right.
So, look at me. I was, like, so symbolic right just then. That was such a good literary analysis and comparison.
Yeah.
So, anyways, this is obviously ridiculous, though.
Yeah.
Jesus just spent the previous scene praying, Father, please take this cup from me. And God's answer was effectively, nah.
Right. And then he gets done telling us that he himself could call on 12 legions of
I could if
angels.
I wanted to, even though my dad said no.
Right.
Like, okay, how big?
Which is it? You can't stop it or you could.
Right.
So
how big is your dad's dick? Like, okay. You know? So then we get the trial, okay?
Yeah.
That is held before the Sanhedrin, the council. And there's some good stuff happening here too.
Okay.
So let us not forget, and this is something we touched on briefly as we were reading. Jesus is taken to the home of Caiaphas, and then Peter follows behind.
Okay.
But this is something that we touched on briefly, you and I. The religious authorities and the Roman authorities have very different jobs.
Yeah.
And so we were like a little bit confused as to like who's arresting him and why didn't they know him and what is going on, right?
Sure.
This becomes an increase, this difference between their roles and their justifications and expectations. This difference becomes increasingly important as the story progresses towards the end that we are now barreling toward.
Okay.
The Jewish leadership, they can interrogate and condemn Jesus religiously, but after that, like, that's all they can do.
Right.
And so they had to get the Roman authority in charge of the situation if they wanted to take this any further. And so the Jewish leadership was like, we got to get, he's challenging every religious belief that we have ever held.
Yeah.
He's challenging Jewish way of life. He's like breaking Jewish laws left and right. And then being like, JK, it's cool to be Jewish still. I promise I'm not breaking any rules. You're just doing it wrong.
They had to find a reason to send him to the Roman authorities.
The higher ups. Right. Yeah. They needed the Roman authorities to take control of this.
Yeah.
So that they could get rid of him.
Right.
Because the Roman authority controls getting rid of prisoners, AKA crucifixion.
Sure.
Which was the norm. This wasn't just for Jesus. This is what they did for all of their people that they were trying to get rid of.
Yeah.
Particularly religious and political rebels and, you know, people that were just like causing a ruckus.
Yeah.
They were like, we're not just going to throw you in jail. We're not just going to like chop your head off like we did with John the Baptist several years ago. We're going to throw you up on a cross for everybody to look at.
Sure.
You know, make a lesson out of you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the narrative is moving Jesus through two overlapping court systems, basically. First, the Jewish religious accusation and then the Roman political execution.
Okay.
And we kind of touched on that, but I just wanted to make sure we spell out what's happening here.
Yeah.
That's why the charge against Jesus eventually needs to become something that Rome cares about.
Right.
Like, they're not just going to throw somebody up on the cross because their local Jews are mad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It had to be something big. So we were like, why did they not already have charges ready? Why? Like, we've been building up to this, and the Jewish leaders have been like so pissed at Jesus this whole time. Why wasn't this already in place?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't in place because Rome wasn't involved so much yet.
Right.
This was just the Jewish leaders.
Right.
Up to this point. Accusations of blasphemy. Like, yeah, that sucks, but like, we're Rome. We don't fucking care. Blaspheme all you fucking want.
Sure.
We're cool wrestling naked. We don't fucking care. Curse of God. Whatevs. That is not nearly as useful to Roman authorities as the accusation that this guy is claiming not just kingship, but king of the Jews, king of man, king of everything,
right.
King of the world, like fucking Leonardo da Vinci, Leonardo DiCaprio at the head of the fucking Titanic. I'm king of the world.
Did he say that, or did Kate Winslet say that?
Well, they said it. They both said it.
Got it.
You get the illusion that I'm making here.
Sure. Yeah. All right.
Like, wow, what a place to make a correction.
No, I was trying to imagine, like, it's been a long time since I've seen that movie, so.
He did say it, but then he brought her up there, and then she said it. Like, they both said it.
Okay.
But he was very excited because he's, like, a nobody from nothing. It meant everything for him to say it.
Sure.
She was from rich land.
Right.
She was rich people. She was marrying rich.
Yeah.
And that was her fucking problem the whole time. Like, that it means something for him to say it.
Yeah.
So that's how I know he said it.
Right.
Okay. Anyways, moving on to verses 62, 63, and 64. Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these chuckle clowns are bringing up against you over here?"
Yeah.
Jesus remained silent. The high priest then said to him, "I charge you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." "You have said so," Jesus replied. "But I say to all of you, from now on, you'll see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven."
Yeah.
Okay. So
technically, he didn't say it. He questioned him whether he was, you know.
Right. Right. He basically is like, if you say so.
Right.
I guess. Sure.
Yeah.
Like,
which is just such a...
It's such a cowardly, like, just fucking man up and, like, deny or...
Yeah, either you are or you aren't, man.
Deny or comply, you know?
Why is it a big deal? If you're the Son of God, if you're the Son of God, you're the Son of God.
Right, just say it.
Right.
So, part of that whole right hand and coming on the clouds and shit, that comes from Psalm 110, verse 1. "The Lord says to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet."
Right. I kind of remember that, actually.
And he laughed because we're like, Jesus putting his feet up. Or God putting his feet up.
Right.
Yeah. So also Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14 read, "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a, quote, Son of Man." Keep that in your brain.
Okay.
"Coming with the clouds of heaven, he approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed."
Hmm.
So we mentioned this the last time that we quoted from these verses in Daniel, but the Aramaic phrase used here, Son of Man, is actually human fucking being. Okay?
Sure.
The phrase Son of Man is used in our translation and many others because of its use in the New Testament as a title for Jesus.
Right.
So not only are they future stuffing, they're back stuffing.
Right, right.
And we have mentioned this before, but it's just as much bullshit now as it was when we said it last time, if not more, because we are closer to Jesus getting offed.
Yeah.
And it pisses me off, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's that whole thing.
Right.
Okay. So let's talk more about the quote unquote humanity versus divinity problem. Is he God or is he human? Is he God or is he human? Is he magic or is he man? We don't know. He's both. He's neither. He's both.
Yeah.
it's probably the biggest theological issue in Matthew, and I would say in the entire fucking New Testament, if you know, you sure. know my opinion.
Yeah.
We're watching Matthew simultaneously construct Jesus as the divine Son of God and a terrified human being who doesn't want to die.
Right.
Like yeah. saying, please don't make me do this. Right. Yeah. And it's bullshit. Christian theology eventually creates a word for this dual situation. It's the hypostatic union.
Hmm.
Jesus is understood as both fully human and simultaneously fully divine.
Okay.
He's a bothsies.
Yeah.
So
he's whatever, again.
He's whatever you need him to be.
Yeah, he's whatever you need him to be.
In any given moment.
Yeah.
Sometimes he has kryptonite in his pocket, and then sometimes he puts kryptonite down and stops being Clark Kent and is Superman.
Yeah.
But then he's able to put that rock right back yeah. in his pocket.
Yeah.
He's both okay. simultaneously without having to put the rock down and take off his glasses.
Yeah, he just, whatever he's thinking, if he's thinking he's God that moment, he's yes. God. If he's not, then he's not.
Right. And yeah. that makes it so easy.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that we even have a fucking vocabulary word for it,
yeah.
it you know, tells you how serious this is.
Right, right.
So the narrative definitely wants to have it both ways. And that's essentially what Christian Christology requires. So sure. you have to believe that that is a that true both thing.
Things are true.
Yeah.
Right.
In order to swallow this story and become Christian.
And again, that's problematic, like mm-hmm. the things that they want us to believe, that we have to have all these dual competing ideas be one thing in our head
mm-hmm.
in order to even get to the point where you can start to believe that right. Christ is a real entity that existed, that died for our sins, that is the Son of God, that is all these things, that these prophecies are true. Like, there's so many inconsistencies, falsehoods, and dual ideas that you have to hurdle over every one of those to even get to the point where you can start to conceive of this as something that is real.
Right. As an autistic person, let me just say, religion is very difficult because not only do I need a set of very clear rules, the rules have to make sense.
Yeah.
The army has rules. They didn't always make fucking sense.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I go through life trying to find the rules and trying to understand the rules and trying to make it make sense. Religion does not give me any of that. It throws what little I do understand straight out the window.
Yeah.
And therefore I could never, you know, could just never.
Right.
And I don't know if that makes me sad, but it does make me kind of relieved. Like, oh, okay, I don't have to ask anymore. Like, oh no, this is done.
Right.
This is so done.
Yeah.
So Jesus is asked, are you leading a fucking rebellion, sir? And he says, no, but he is, though. He actually is leading a fucking rebellion.
Sure.
Kind of. Depends on what you mean by it.
A religious right? rebellion.
He absolutely created a movement that yeah. challenged existing religious authority. So in that case, yeah, he's gathering folks that are following him. He has followers. It's a fucking rebellion.
Sure.
But Matthew, the book thereof, is trying to distinguish religious confrontation from armed insurrection. And that's why he tells Peter, put your sword down. So Jesus's movement definitely has political implications, particularly as he's proclaiming the coming kingdom of God.
Okay.
But that claim is potentially explosive under Roman occupation, it wasn't like violent under the Jewish situation, if that makes sense.
What do you mean by violent?
Like his rebellion, his standing up wasn't violent.
Okay. All right. Sorry. I was just, yeah.
You kind of lost the place there.
Yeah. We're good now.
Yeah. So he's not leading an armed revolt.
Right.
Is the point I'm trying to make. Leading a religious revolt.
Okay.
Which, I mean, clearly if Peter like was pulling out his sword, it was leading to a fucking armed revolt.
Right. Yeah.
But he's like, but let's not though.
Yeah.
even though Peter's like, but I already did though.
And I do think it's interesting. Like, I don't really imagine Jesus and his apostles with swords.
Right?
You know? But yeah. There they are with swords.
I always imagined them with, like, canes or walking sticks.
Something, yeah.
Like, staffs. That's the word I'm looking for.
Right.
I imagine them with staffs.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, fishermen and sheep herders, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I guess Peter had a sword.
Plus, what's the Son of God need with swords?
You know? Well, apparently Jesus doesn't have one, but Peter sure as fuck did. Well,
what is his friends, you know, whatever, you know? Like, why do they need a sword?
So, Rome was always executing people for sedition. So,
yeah,
they were like, give us a reason. We'll go ahead and throw this motherfucker up on a cross.
We like killing people.
Yeah, it's fun.
Let's do this shit.
And so then when they get all these like false witnesses and stuff, they're like, we need something to stick.
Okay.
Like, that's part of where I'm going with that.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
The charge of political rebellion is extremely dangerous in the Roman Empire.
Okay.
Okay, so it's escalated.
Yeah.
All right. Jesus wasn't literally organizing an army, but he might as well have been.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, we had questions about who cares. If they wanted Jesus dead, would it matter if the witnesses were false or not?
Yeah.
Probably to the priests, it didn't matter.
Right.
They didn't. They were trying to set him up. Remember, yeah. They tried to set him up multiple times.
Right.
So yeah, to them, they're like false witness, true witness. We don't fucking care.
Well, and to be fair to them, in their mind, he had already broken laws that mm-hmm. were Mosaic laws.
They were so, witnesses themselves.
Right.
But religious laws don't matter to the Roman.
Right. They're just like, hey, Rome, leaders. What the fuck do you need to prosecute this guy? Because like, we need him prosecuted.
Yeah. So, which I kind of mentioned at the time that I thought that might be the case, because you were like, this doesn't make sense. Why didn't they already? But because we didn't quite realize that there was two different legal systems happening simultaneously,
sure.
and that Jesus was having to move through both of them.
Right.
So, even a hostile judicial proceeding still has rules, and it's important to remember who was doing what where. Like, understanding how it's set up is very important.
Right.
The story portrays the council as looking for legitimate testimony that will justify the verdict that they already wanted. So the Jewish leadership already knew what they wanted. They just need a legally or theologically acceptable reason to do it. So when they turn to Rome, they're like, here's what we got. And Rome's like, can you give me a little bit more?
Right.
And so Rome is like up in Jesus's face. And then they're like, who do you think you is?
Right.
And then Rome is like, the Jewish leadership is like, tell them how you think you're the
king of the Jews.
Well, first they're like, tell them how you think you're the son of God. And he's like, yeah. I guess.
Right.
And then, or he doesn't really say anything. And then they're like, tell them how you think you're the king of the Jews. And then he's like, yeah, okay. I guess.
He still didn't give him an exact answer.
No, but like, Rome was like, sold!
Right.
So, once Jesus effectively gives them the theological basis themselves,
yeah,
they don't need the witnesses anymore.
Got it.
So, they had all these false witnesses, but then no witnesses were necessary because they prodded him until they got, like, will this make you happy, Rome?
Right.
Does this please you? And Rome was like, yeah, totally. So, the authorities had obviously been watching Jesus for a while.
Well, yeah, because they've sent the, like, tax collector, like, they've sent people to him before.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So.
And Matthew repeatedly tells us, the book thereof, tells us repeatedly that they've been plotting against him.
Sure.
But don't forget ever, it was the Jewish leadership plotting against him, not Rome itself.
No, but they did involve Roman centurions at one point, or whatever, the Herodians, which were an arm of the law for that question about the taxes or whatever.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Anytime that they can get him on a legalistic thing, yeah, they will absolutely get Rome involved.
Right.
But it can't be just theology.
Sure.
It can't just be like, he called God a dick.
Right.
Like, Rome's like, I don't fucking care.
Right.
Your God is a dick, for all we know.
Right.
Like, we've got 30 million gods.
Yeah, what do we care about yours?
Yeah, we'll just switch them out, you know? So, Matthew is compressing all of these events very dramatically. We're going to see more in the other Gospels. We'll see the story spelled out a little differently.
Okay.
It'll be spun out a little at a different pace.
Sure.
Okay. So a further complication here that we're going to see is that the religious authorities don't possess the same authority as Rome to execute somebody.
Sure.
And that's why we've got these two, like, not opposing arms of government, but definitely not working in sync.
Sure.
They happen to overlap for 1 second, and Jesus got the brunt.
Right.
So the process has to ultimately become a Roman political case.
Sure.
Okay.
Because they're the ones that are actually in charge politically.
Yes. Yes. So that helped me understand the situation a little bit better, because me and you were like, they've been watching him. Like, what the fuck?
Right.
And also you had the question, like, what, don't they know who this guy is? I don't understand. Like, he was so important and bothersome for 20, however many chapters. And then they show up to arrest him and they don't even know which one is him. And that's what I was saying at the time. Like, well, I mean, the Jewish guys are totally bothered by him, but sure. Rome don't give a fuck who this guy is.
Right.
And it turns out, yeah, that is the case. Rome was like, which one is he again now?
Right.
Like, I don't know. We got lots of fucking dissidents up in here. Which one is your guy?
Right.
Like, you all look the same to me. Oh, I'm not racist.
But that doesn't say a lot for his cause either, though.
Like, right.
I mean, he wasn't a big enough name to make a splash.
He wasn't bothering Rome.
Right.
Rome didn't give a fuck about him until the Jewish leadership made him a thorn.
Yeah. And then they caught him on a fucking technicality or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like that's basically what this boiled down to.
Yeah.
Like, Rome's like, yeah, I guess we'll kill him for you. Sure.
Let's do this. At that, like, when we read the story, the guy, like, it could easily have been this Jesus or the other Build-A-Bear Jesus.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The Barabbas guy.
Sure.
I think that's Barabbas.
Yeah, because
they asked the crowd, like, the Roman governor guy asked the crowd, which Jesus do you want me to let go? And they're like, Build-A-Bear. And so he let him go, and he says, fine, fuck you. I wash my hands of this.
Spoilers. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. That's in the chapter that comes after this Q&A.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's going to happen.
Right.
That's going to happen.
Yes.
Sorry for the spoilers.
That's right.
But it's true that, like, you know, Rome had to be pushed to be bothered.
Right.
They were probably more bothered by the Roman leadership than by Jesus himself. If you think about it,
they were more. Who was more bothered by
Rome? Was probably more bothered by the Jewish leadership.
Oh, you said Roman leadership.
Oh,
so that's why I was
Rome
confused.
Was more bothered by the Jewish leadership than by Jesus himself. Is my guess.
I mean,
they didn't even know who Jesus was.
Right.
But the Jewish leadership was like, this guy's bothering us. He's stealing all our Legos. He's being on every street corner with his son of God fucking magic and shit.
Right.
And Rome was like, all y'all be doing that, though.
Yeah.
Y'all got angels and devils on every fucking street corner. We don't fucking care. Like, I have to think that this was such a pain in their ass.
Probably.
So the Sanhedrin at this point reacts with horror and brutality.
Yeah.
And they're like, the son of what? The king of whom? Whoomst? Whoomst? And so then they start spitting on him, slapping him, and they're like, the hell you say? And so they accuse him of blasphemy. It wasn't the son of God that was the blasphemy. It was the king of anything ever that was the blasphemy.
Got it.
Yeah. And so then they start abusing him.
Okay.
And this is where the scene immediately shifts from a legal proceeding to ritualized humiliation and that whole crowd mentality that we'll get into.
Sure.
The council wasn't necessarily discovering new things that Jesus had said just that morning.
Okay.
They're already convinced he's guilty.
Right.
Once the verdict is effectively established, though, the violence becomes punishment and humiliation, and it goes hard.
Yeah.
It goes pretty hard.
Well, I'm sure that the people that are spectating these things are, they enjoy this shit. right? Like they enjoy the
it's
the,
like reality the punishment TV.
And the whole that whole aspect. Yeah, of it,
so. It's reality TV back in right. the day. Like yeah. you had somebody walking around holding up a sign, telling the crowd when to go boo or oh or yeah or aw.
Right, but right. but you know, it this didn't spark a rebellion either.
Right.
He did not have a rebellion-sized following that was like, no!
Not Jesus!
He had a small enough, he had a large enough following that it sparked a movement that followed up with this later and
right.
told the story.
Right.
But not one that sparked anything more than that.
Right. Well, one thing that I was led to remember in re-listening to our intro to Matthew
yeah.
is let us not forget that this story was written in a city and it spread like wildfire.
Sure.
And this was written also right on the heels of the Second Temple being destroyed.
Right.
Which helped spread the sure. news of this story.
Yeah.
So those are all things that went into helping make the wonderful religion that we love today.
Yeah.
Ugh. So we're supposed to understand that Jesus is not actually being defeated here, though. He's surrendering.
Got
he
it.
Wasn't beat, okay?
Yeah.
He allowed these things to happen to him.
Right.
Very important that you grasp that.
Sure.
Okay? I want you to understand he let them spit on him and punch him and shit like that.
Whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Fearing association with Jesus, Peter denies his relationship with Jesus three times, and then the cock crows, cock-a-doodle-doo!
Right, just as Jesus said would happen.
Yep, and then Peter is the little crybaby, and he's like, oh, no, I was a bad guy, just like he said. And the end of okay. that chapter.
So that was our Q&A for Matthew chapter 26.
Sure as fuck was.
And I think we all know what's coming.
I mean...
There's, you know...
I already gave some spoilers.
You
some
did,
shit
you
goes
did.
Down in chapter some
shit,
27.
Some shit goes down, that's for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sorry this took us a little while to get out. And we do have the next chapter will be coming out shortly. Well, tomorrow, because it's already done. So mm-hmm. all I got to do is get that one put up. And then we'll have this one out today. And then tomorrow we'll have 27. And then
I'll do a Q&A over 27. We'll have a live on Tuesday where we'll read 28. I don't know if the Q&A over 27 will be out before Tuesday. But anyway, Tuesday is our live Discord, 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
And we'll be reading chapter 28.
Yeah. Join us there and we'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey, wife. I guess that's the end.
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.